John Gambling with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Here we go. Good morning, everybody. Michael Bloomberg on a Friday John Gambling Show. Mr. Mayor, hello there.
Good morning. Rain.
Yeah, that looks that way, huh?
You know, we need it to keep from having a drought.
But it does sort of stifle.
Well, you never know. I mean, I wouldn't make my plans based on the forecast. Make your plans, and then if you have to cancel them,
just keep on going.
Yeah, most times.
They're wrong.
Predicting the future is difficult, whether it's the weather guy or the economist or the stock picker.
I got to chuckle.
The only thing I know is that your audience is going to be there.
Well, certainly hope so. I got to chuckle this week when they reported, or maybe it was the end of last week, one of the weather satellites, major weather satellites, went out of business and went got on the fritz or whatever it is, and they said it might affect the weather forecast. I said, oh, really? I mean, what difference does it make if you're wrong?
They have gotten better at predicting. The problems are when you live near a mountain range or the water, because that's where the
stuff
changes and goes up or down or stops and backs up. And
speaking of ups and downs, I like the idea about the Ferris wheel over in Staten Island.
You know, it sounds like a dumb idea, except that when you really think about it, this has actually got a very good chance of working. There are 2 million tourists that take the Staten Island ferry over to St. George, get off the boat, take it back. They tend not to do a lot of other stuff there. If the Ferris wheel's right there, that's 2 million a year. There are a lot of people who will go there to shop. If you have some big box stores, people right now are going to New Jersey, going to Nassau County, going to Connecticut. Those that live on Staten Island would typically go to New Jersey or out to Nassau. People in Brooklyn go to Nassau. And if you can get them to stay here, you have jobs here, you have tax base here, it's easier for the consumers. So this whole thing might actually pull together.
We were talking about it.
And Staten Island, incidentally, is not what people think. It's very diverse. It is all economic and ethnic groups. And it's a bedroom community. Very low crime.
Not to mention some of the great views of New York City.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, some people say, well, I've never been there. You should go.
I mean,
and there's a lot of small cultural, a lot of small cultural institutions because every one of these ethnic groups start their own.
We were talking about it this morning, and we opened up the phones, and I asked for Staten Islanders to kind of weigh in here. One person brought up the issue of why not charge the tourists or the non-Staten Island residents for the ferry boats. You will be gone. You will not be mayor.
I will not be mayor. That would certainly end your career. My recollection is when we tried to do that for congestion pricing, have a different price for those coming outside of New York City from those just going within New York City from one borough to another, the court said you can't do that.
Oh, really?
My guess would be that you can't do that. If you charge for the Staten Island ferry, you'd have to charge for everyone, and that's not going to happen. We're going to leave the ferry at zero. If you were going to design the perfect mass transit system, you would have it be totally free. And you would charge people for their automobiles, whether it's per mile or going over a bridge or parking or something or other, because you really would like to force people or encourage people, is a better word, into using mass transit. That's what's in everybody's interest. It may not be as pleasurable as you have your own car and you've got your coffee there and you get some privacy. But the Staten Island Ferry, it was a nickel, as I remember when I came to New York in the mid-60s. It went up to 25 cents. Somebody during, I think it was the Giuliani administration, discovered that it cost more than 25 cents to collect the fare.
To collect the money.
So rather than raise the fare, they made it zero.
only in New York.
That's the real world. And once you have it, you're not going to change it. Let's get serious. But it is a great ride still.
Your point about the mass transit, and I couldn't agree with it more, is that you want to encourage people to do it. But you've got to have the mass transit system capable of providing the necessary service.
Yes. Well, number one, the ferry is necessary service. And it is very well run and clean and pleasurable. The subways, you know me, I'm a big believer in New York subways. One of the reporters wrote yesterday, I said it wasn't crowded. I said, yeah, you got to go early.
It's crowded at rush hour.
That's what I said. I said, it's surprising. It's crowded when everybody wants to use it, as my kids would say, duh. but the subways are so much better than when I came to the city in 66, I think it was. They in those days, they were not air conditioned. So in the summer, I mean, I'd get on at in the 70s, and by 14th Street, you were soaking wet, yeah. Literally just yeah. Like you'd gotten through a shower.
The problem,
there was graffiti, there was crime, beggars that broke down all the time today. All that stuff's been fixed.
The problem on the go forward, though, is that if for some reason everybody switched from their cars, if a significant population shifted, the system would be overtaxed. In its present configuration.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that once again, the more people, the more crowded it's going to be. Okay, thank you.
You know,
said that, you know, it's still so much quicker if you live in the right place. Now, if you don't, remember, the subways don't go to a lot of parts of our city, and there's some places where it takes for a long time. But for me, I go up and down the East Side, and in the middle of the day, if I have to give a speech in Midtown, just so much easier. It's so quick to hop on the subway or to go to Yankee Stadium. Citi Field, you know, the 7 is a little bit long, takes a little longer. Yankee Stadium, yeah, it's crowded before the game. You're stuffed in like a sardine. Number one, it's fun. Everybody's talking about the game. And number two, it's so quick. I'd rather put up with that than sitting in a comfortable car for a long period of time, getting frustrated in a traffic jam, and that's
well. This is one of my arguments about the Tappan Zee Bridge and why they should put mass transit across the new one that they're going to build,
yeah,
rather than
that.
Waiting down the road. Yeah, because we know about those things; they never happen.
I couldn't agree more with you.
All right, let's see here. 15 minutes after 8 o'clock, Ferris wheel. You met with Benjamin Netanyahu yesterday.
Yes, and his wife and youngest son. I think he has two boys. The youngest son was there. And we had a nice lunch, chance to catch up, talked a lot about the economy. Israel's economy is doing very well. I gave a speech a couple weeks ago in Washington comparing North and South Carolina, two states that are basically very similar, similar part of the country, similar histories. And South Carolina is focused on trying to protect the old line industries, textiles and things like that. North Carolina is focused on high tech and building a great college and graduate school system. And North Carolina is home to 11 corporate headquarters and South Carolina one. I mean, that you can see that happening. And Israel is focused on a lot of high tech stuff, and that's why their economy is booming. And those countries in Europe that have done that have done much better than the others.
Did you get a sense of his attitude about the international?
Well, he's very frustrated. I mean, I think a good analogy would be if a country very close to us said they were going to annihilate us and started building nuclear bombs. Can you imagine? Everybody'd be in high dungeon. Nobody would be able to stop right away. We got to go attack. And when it's somebody else's, take some time and work on it. Now, you know, number one, I don't think individuals should, you have a right to your opinion, but you got to be careful in terms of what you're going to do in terms of foreign policy. There are laws about that. I've been a big fan of Hillary Clinton's job. She has worked as hard as anybody could possibly work. I'm not sure I agree with all her policies, some yes, some no, but Hillary Clinton's a class act and has worked as just really over and above what you could ask for somebody to try to represent the Obama administration, and that's what she does. Policy is probably more set in the White House than in Foggy Bottom, but you know, somehow or other they've worked that out behind closed doors, which is what they should do. And if that they keep counseling, take your time and sanctions will work. The Israeli position, or at least certainly Netanyahu's position, is supposing we misjudge, if you have enough enriched uranium to make a bomb, it just disappears. You hide it someplace, and making a bomb is easy. It's getting the enriched uranium. And sometimes our intelligence isn't as good as you would hope it would be. So you're never really sure for sure how far along they are. And it's a risk that he thinks Israel can't run. And I'm sympathetic in the sense that if it was America, we would not run that risk. I don't think there's any question about that, number one. And also, I said yesterday, if you go back and look in the 30s, when you have regimes that are built on hatred and racial or ethnic discrimination or hatred. I think those countries showed then that you can't trust them to tell the truth or to follow international laws. And this is something where if you don't have deadlines, they call it a red line, nobody's going to pay attention. Without red lines, to me, it's all diplo-speak. I guess I'd coin the term. Maybe somebody else has used it before. Everybody hears what they want to hear. Yes, I was tough. But then the other side, but it didn't hurt because we don't have to do it. And that's the real danger here. And, you know, the president's got to make decisions. It's his job. We should rally around the president. But you still have a right to express your opinions. And I think that sanctions help, but they obviously aren't enough because Iran keeps doing this and saying these things. And if the Israelis have an obligation, I mean, you know, one bomb could take out that whole country. And then what do you do afterwards? Whether we would go and bomb somebody in retaliation or not, and you know what happened. Well, it's already done. You don't want to kill a bunch of innocent people, so we're not going to go. We wouldn't use a bomb, I don't think, afterwards. But even if you did, it doesn't do anything. Then it's just being, it's just retaliatory. It's to teach a lesson to other countries down the road for the future who might want to attack us. But the Israelis would be out of...
But the diplomatic problem is, though, that if one country did that and another country disappears, there's nothing to stop them from doing it again to another country unless
you
kind
think
of push
about
back.
If I were Iran and I had a nuclear bomb, I wouldn't use it to bomb somebody. I'd use it to make other bombs, because then nobody's going to be able to stop you as long as you don't use it, and it's carte blanche. You can do it, and then you start. So what happens if they give bombs to some terrorist organizations? It just goes downhill terribly.
Can you imagine being Netanyahu or any president of Israel with that being sort of the umbrella over every decision you make?
Can you imagine any president of the United States in the same situation? I think we got to put ourselves in other people's shoes. And, we have sayings when you're kids, don't put all your eggs in one basket. And that was the Bernie Madoff lesson, except that people didn't learn that from their parents. There's another lesson that says good fences make good neighbors. And I think there's a lot to be said for that.
All right, Mr. Mayor, sit tight. Let me take a break right here. 21 after 8 o'clock. Let me remind everyone as well that if you've got... All right, we continue with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mayor's Hour is brought to you by Rigatino Motor Car Corporation. Experience the legend in luxury. Route 1 North Edison or Rigatino Union Route 22 West. Stop in today. Take advantage of all the terrific programs and lease specials. Plan B, birth control, high school experiment.
We've been doing it for many years. The difference here is we're trying it in schools that don't have big health departments, but we've been doing it. Funny thing is, our Young Men's Initiative, which is this program where George Soros generously gave us $30 million, and the city put in some money, I put in some money, looking at death rates by ethnicity among kids and pregnancy by ethnicity among kids. The bottom line is, in poorer neighborhoods, there's just an awful lot more. If a young girl has a baby, you know, out of wedlock at age 14 or 15, 16, her prospects are just dismal, because she'll invariably drop out of school and not be able to. And the child's prospects are dismal, too. At that age, generally, there's some exceptions, but at that age, generally, you're not mature enough to take care of the child. The first thing to do is to try to help these kids prevent getting pregnant. Now, if they have the child, we have an obligation to society, and it's tricky. People say, oh, you know, it's the mother shouldn't have done it. Yeah, but it's the kid that's going to suffer if you don't help. So you really have no choice but to step in and help the child. But here we're trying to, through education and then birth control, keep kids from having babies. And we've been successful. And the pregnancy rate is down 35% over the last 10 years among teenage girls. But it's still very high. I think something like 7,000 a year or something. I don't know why that.
The decision to make it where you have to opt out rather than opt in.
Well, they're both ridiculous because you can't get to the parents or you can't opt either way. The bottom line is nobody ever sees the form, nobody ever fills it out, nobody ever brings it back. So forms don't work. We have the provision that if you want to opt out, yes, you can. I've always thought that the practical aspects are that probably most people don't stop to think about it, but then opt-in is exactly the same thing. There's no easy answer to these questions. Do you want to help kids so that teach them so that they don't have kids? People always come back to talking about abstinence. Yeah, abstinence is right, but the bottom line is it's ridiculous in this day and age, whether you like it or not. It's a different world, John, than when you and I grew up. Kids are sexually active at a much earlier age. They don't tell their parents typically, and there's this great disconnect. When you survey parents, do you work with your teenage kids and explain the birds and the bees?
Yes.
And when you talk to the kids, did your parents ever mention it? No. There's that enormous disconnect. You probably want to, based on results, it looks like the kids are probably right, okay? Parents just want to avoid it, or they make veiled references and assume the kid understands, which they don't. And so you have this enormous out-of-wedlock pregnancy number, and you want to do something about it, teach them that the best thing to do is to maybe abstinence. If you are going to be sexually active, use prophylactic measures. And a lot of people would argue, now some don't, but a lot of people would argue that Plan B is not much different than a barrier kind of prophylactic. If you believe that conception starts at birth, that's different. And there are people who believe that anything that prevents even a barrier is immoral. I think that's taking it to another level, but that's what people, if people believe that's what they want.
All right, taking what you said, do you not finally go down the road where you offer this at all high schools, in all high schools?
Yeah, I think we might come very close.
I thought it was 13, I read that.
I think it's 13. I got to go back and look at the numbers. Yeah, I think it's 13 that we're trying. They don't have health departments. We've been doing it for a long time in a lot of high schools. I think virtually all high schools give away condoms.
I know, yes.
You know, I mean, people say, what do you mean you do it? That's the real world. Mm-hmm. And a teenage girl having a baby out of wedlock
is a bad thing.
I mean, it's not good for the mother and it's not good for the baby. And I'm sure there's a Nobel Prize winner that was born that way someplace that turned out just fine, but the statistics are not there. And then unfortunately, we also have this culture among young men that, you know, they're not responsible. And so one of the things we're trying to do with the Young Men's Initiative is get the father to understand they have a responsibility as well. But, you know, a teenage boy and a teenage girl, and they just get together, and in this day and age, why? You know, it's not the school system. School system cannot replace whole changes in society. You look at the movies, you look at television, you look at the fashion ads. You look at the video games. We're encouraging violence with a lot of the video games and the innuendos, and encouraging sex isn't quite the right word, but more promiscuous life. That's just there, and it's there in lots of things. I'm not making a value judgment, good or bad, but I think it's. But I've got to deal in the world of reality, and we've got to try to stop these kids from getting pregnant. It may not be perfect, but it's better than the alternatives, to my way of thinking, and other people might not agree.
All right, Mr. Mayor, and we will get into more things. Again, let me remind you, if you've got a question for the mayor, 800-321-0710. I see a couple of lines open. Talk to Mike Figliola and see if he'll let you on here this morning. He's sort of the gatekeeper. 832, we're coming right back with the mayor. Joe? All right. The Mayor's Hour is brought to you by Racatina Lexus. Experience the legend in luxury. Racatina Lexus, New Jersey, Route 35, Oakhurst, Route 9 South, Freehold, Boston Post Road, Larchmont. Stop in today. Take advantage of the Golden Opportunity Lexus sales event. All right, Mr. Mayor, your reaction to the NAACP's complaint to the Education Department over the elite schools and the lack of Black and Hispanic students.
The number one, they're right. There are very few Black and Hispanic students. If you take a look at higher education, Asians do much better than whites. Whites do better than Black and Latinos, who do roughly the same. The best guess of researchers are that a lot of it has to do with preparation. Families, if you from day one taught you got to study, you know, you go back to the Tiger Mom, remember that book and that sort of thing. Would I have studied if my parents hadn't beaten me over the head? No, that's exactly right.
Same
I was never
family.
A great student, you know. Do your homework or you can't go out. Or when you came home with, I came home with a D in French.
You got yelled at.
Yelled at. Forget that. It was. The argument that the NAACP makes is that some kids come from families where they can afford tutoring, and that's true. Some do, some don't. I've always thought that, you know, I run against somebody who went to a better college than I did or have to compete with them and work. Sometimes that's just the way it is. We have these specialized high schools. They are some of the brightest lights in our school system. They are nationally recognized as some of the best schools in the nation. And they're designed for the best and the brightest, which incidentally would not include me. I would never have gotten into these schools. It isn't even close. And in accordance with state law that sets the admission standards, we have one single exam. And people say, well, one exam is not fair. There are other things. When it comes to math and science, there's nothing touchy-feely about it. You either
know the facts or you don't.
Yeah, yeah, you know how to integrate the function or solve for X or you don't, period. What we have to focus on in the city is equal access, equal opportunity. And if they're not equal results, you can go back to the drawing boards and still try to find ways to make it more equal in terms of the opportunity. But we don't base any part of our decisions on race. We shouldn't. It's not our job to ensure that there'll be an equal result in everything. We've just got to make sure that the programs ensure equal opportunity. That launching, and we got to. Dennis Walcott started some things that to help students. You can't base it on race. We base it on economics of the family. And we started something called the Dream Specialized High School Institute last spring with students. We work with them for 22 months and from the sixth grade to the eighth grade when they're thinking about high school, and we try to teach them better study methods and that sort of thing. You want all your schools to be better. We keep trying to, and keep in mind the NAACP sued us to stop us closing 20-odd schools that were disasters. And replacing the faculty and restructuring the schools.
And they left them the same.
And the courts ruled with them. Hopefully we'll win on appeal someday. But you're going to have a whole other generation of kids that are being damaged by that one act.
Seems to be conflict here between the two.
Not conflict. It's totally disingenuous. You know, we're trying to give every kid the opportunity. And if they're going to fight us when we can't, because the kids aren't prepared for the tests, then help us. Prepare for the test. Don't fight us to stop it. So far, I think we've had something like 2,500 students participated in this Dream Specialized High School the first year. So I think it's something like the largely public-funded prep program of any kind in the country. And we're going to keep working on giving kids as much preparation as they can. But the test is the test. You pass it. You're at the top. You get in. You're not at the top. You don't get in. That's what this set of schools is designed for. It's not designed for certain disciplines where there's lots of different ways to look at it. And I don't think that that's those. There are other things that you want to look at. You, for example, you have a school that focuses on music. You listen to the kids play the clarinet. Or let me give you a different example. When you are auditioning for a symphony orchestra, professional level, a good symphony orchestra, you come in. You pick up your instrument. You are behind a barrier. The judges do not see you.
They only listen.
They only listen to music. You're not allowed to talk, so because an accent or something might give it away who you are. And they pick the best music. Now, in this case, you're picking the best math and science skills. It's a very similar kind of thing. And if you want the best music in your symphony orchestra, that's the ways to do it. If you have other objectives for your symphony orchestra, that's fine, but just people, I think, generally want the music and don't want to use that as another venue for something else.
The other thing, and you and I have referenced or used this as an example of, for other things, in the real world, there's always going to be somebody smarter than you are, and that if you want to succeed within that environment, whatever it happens to be, you just have to work a little bit harder.
I have said this 1,000 times. My strategy, I knew I wasn't the smartest kid, but I made sure I was the first one in the morning. The only other person in then was the managing partner. If he wanted to borrow a match for his cigar, he came over to see if I had a match.
You were going
to
light it.
I didn't light it for him, but you know, if he wanted to talk about who won the game last night or something. And
he remembered your name.
I made sure I was the last one there at night, and I went uptown with the number two guy in the firm because there was nobody else. What's he going to do? Say, don't share a subway car with me? We walked out together, so we got in the subway or took the cab together or whatever. I made sure that I took less vacation. You don't get the opportunities if you're not there. And if you like your work, vacations to me have never been all that important because still to this day, I like going in. Everyone, it's nice to have a day off, nice to go play golf. You and I enjoy both enjoy that. But you got to outwork everybody else. Or if you're not born that smart, then that's the one thing you can control. I don't know if I ever told you a story. When I was in first and second year between in business school, I rented apartments, worked for a little real estate company in Harvard Square, and I got in at 6:30 in the morning, and people called up to make appointments to look at apartments, and I booked myself all day. The other four rental agents were adult men who were feeding their families. They came in at 9, and they never could understand why everybody that walked in the door all day long had an appointment with somebody named Mr. Bloomberg. And I made enough to pay room, board, and tuition for my second year, which was good because my father had died and my mother wasn't making that much money and my sister was still in school. And all you had to do was be there early. I never understood why they didn't do that.
Desire is what it is. Bronx DA, Robert Johnson, not prosecuting trespassing in some public housing.
Look, I don't need to have a fight with the Bronx DA. I happen to like Bob, and he does a lot of good work. I just think he's dead wrong in this, that you have to be, the essence of a society is that you're safe on the streets. If you don't have that, you don't have a tax base, then you can't help people because there's no tax base to have good teachers and no tax base to have firefighters and ambulances show up and all that sort of thing. So it all starts with crime, and that's in a very well-led, funded, supplied police department. We've looked at the statistics, did again yesterday for all the other major cities, and virtually all of them have crime rates. Chicago has 350 murders through, I don't know,
June,
later than that, I think. They have a population a third of ours. Baltimore and New Orleans has 300 odd murders. They have a population of 300,000 or 400,000 people. We have 8 million people. Just think if you scale that up. And there are some programs that work and some of these things where you try to go out in the community and calm things down. Some of our police do that. Some community groups do that. Some city groups do that. But the bottom line is you have to get the kids to understand if they carry a gun, they're likely to get stopped by a cop. And that's not going to be a good experience for anybody. And if the fewer guns in the streets, the fewer murders is going to be, fewer shootings are going to be. And, you know, if you walk away from some of it, you want to be you have to be within the law. The First Amendment and the Constitution is a wonderful document. It protects all of us. But that doesn't mean that you have to walk away from practical policing as well as intelligent policing. And a police officer has to make a decision. And in terms of in the public housing, unfortunately, it's a fact of life. There's a much higher crime rate within the public housing system than in other kinds of housing. We have lots of cops that work. Used to be a separate police department. We merged it all together. Joanne Jaffe's the three-star chief that runs it. And, you know, it's we brought down crime dramatically. Is there still too much crime? Yes. But you have cops in there. They've got to stop. They've got to ask questions. You just can't say, well, you can't stop anybody that's walking in the halls because you don't know. Do you want lower crime or don't you? And I think most people that live in public housing want lower crime. They don't want to have to look over their shoulders. They have a right to live safely. And we're going to provide that right. And you don't do that by making the cop's job more difficult. You don't want to walk away from standards and what the law requires and what's fair. But the bottom line is to expect the cop to know who's the bad guy and who's the good guy. They don't wear signs, you know. The good guys don't wear white hats, and the black guys and the black hats are all bad guys. That's just in the movies, maybe, but it's certainly not.
What can the city do to change the DA's mind?
Well, you can
anything
get
legally,
your,
or is it just
no? I mean,
argument?
a lot of this is, I believe, up to the district attorney.
Right,
but district attorneys are elected. And district attorneys read newspapers, and district attorneys are human beings, and we all like to have people say good things about you. You know, no, judges and district attorneys and mayors and radio talk show hosts are all susceptible to listening to what people have to say.
All right. I understand that the demand for homeless facilities has risen, and that the city has expanded opportunity. Where do you find that kind of
the state constitution, as interpreted by the courts, say anybody in New York has the right to housing, that the state must provide housing, and then there are some standards as to what it can be. It can't be a pup tent in the desert. You know, it's got to be. And if you say, well, wait a second, what about somebody who flies to New York, gets off the plane, and says to the cab driver, take me to the shelter system? Okay, you might not like that, but that's what the courts say the Constitution says. So we have to deal with that. And we had this very aggressive program to reduce the number of people in shelters. Two things happened. One, the economy tanked. And number two, the amount of money from the feds and from the state decreased dramatically. No more Section 8 vouchers. The state took away a whole bunch of money we had, which we were matching, and we can't do it all on our own. So we don't have the programs to move them out of the system, the shelter system, into permanent housing that we used to have. So you have, because of the economy, more people coming in, because of that, less fewer people going out. And then you have to find places, and the law says we got to find them. So we will rent an old hotel or an office or an apartment building or something. You don't want it in your neighborhood. Nobody wants it in their neighborhood. But it turns out, incidentally, most people would, I guess, don't put words in people's mouths, but I think generally the homeless shelters have not destroyed neighborhoods or really hurt anybody. What's much more controversial is you try to cite a high school. Everybody wants more schools, but nobody wants a high school in that neighborhood.
That's a funny irony, isn't it? 10 before 9 o'clock. Let me see here. We are all full up on the questions. Mr. Mayor, we'll get to the telephones here in just a moment. We'll be right back. Mr. Mayor, grab your earpiece right there. We'll go to the telephones here. We've got lots of questions. Let's go with line number 5 first. That's Ray. Ray, you've got the mayor. Go.
Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning.
John. Love you, John. Love your dad. Listen for years. Mayor, I really like you. I always have, especially your matter-of-fact and business-like approach to finances and that sort of thing. And I love Giuliani. A lot of people didn't like him, but he cleaned the city up. You've done a lot of things, too. But it bothers me when you say, some people think this, and some people think that, and other people think this, but we're going to do it my way. And I don't want you to take it personally, but you had two great terms. You were fantastic. Yeah, I'd love to see you go for a third term, but it's not the law, and you did it. Now you think people are too fat, so they can't have a large drink. They can buy two more candy bars with the money, or they can buy two 16 ounces. And then the other thing is with the girls with the pregnancy. I am absolutely on your side with that, too. It's absolutely, you're absolutely right. But it's America.
Okay.
It's,
well,
okay, right. Let me say, number one, thank you for the kind words. And Rudy did leave the city better than he found it, and we've built on that. And hopefully whoever comes after me will build on what we did. You and I probably really are on the same side of most of this stuff. I do not believe we should ban most things. I don't think we should ban smoking. I think it's our obligation to tell you that smoking is bad for you. I think it's our obligation to try to discourage kids from smoking. They're not old enough to make the kind of decisions that adults in theory can make, and so we raise taxes. I'm opposed to banning full sugar drinks, but we can tell you that, you know, more than 16 ounces isn't great for you if you do it every day, by having a restriction on the size of the cup. And keep in mind, the soda companies have restrictions on the size of bottles they sell, so everybody's doing that. Plan B, it doesn't force anybody to take it, but it's available. And so I guess where I come out is we have an obligation to tell you what science says is good and bad for you, and we have an obligation to, if it's really bad, then step in. For example, we enforce fire code laws of the number of people in a building. If there's asbestos in the air in a building, we would vacate the building. But when it comes to banning most of this stuff, I'm really on the side of telling people what's good and what's bad based on the current science and then letting you make the decision. So I'm not so sure that you and I really, if we'd sit down and have dinner and break bread, would come out very much differently on a lot of that. But because I agree with you, this is America, and if you're an adult and able to make your own decisions, you can make some good ones, you can make some bad ones. If you screw up, hopefully we can help you. But, you know, everybody's sympathy for somebody, an adult that screws up, is a lot less than kids. When kids screw up, then I do think we have an obligation to try to help them. Anyways, appreciate your call.
All right, Ray, thank you for the kind words for me as well. Let's go to line one. Gabrielle, good morning.
Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning. Good morning. Question.
Street signs. Let's in Manhattan, let's say. I'm on 8th Avenue. I'm at an intersection. I look up to see what street I'm on. There's only one street sign on one corner of the intersection.
I'm with you. Boy, thank you. I got to talk to our Department of Transportation. I think a lot of the signs were there, incidentally, in all the corners. But when they put up scaffolding, they sometimes knock them down. The other thing that's a big problem, Gabrielle, is if you look at a lot of these corners, we've named streets and intersections, you know, the father so-and-so, sister so-and-so, brother so-and-so way or whatever. And it's a nice thing to do. The city council likes to do it because they let them, you know, lets you take care of somebody in your neighborhood and helps. The trouble is that if somebody calls the police department and says, hey, I've got a fire or I've got a heart attack, come to such and such way, the cops don't know where, or the fire department doesn't know where that is. It also is annoying, you know, is it Avenue of the Americas or 6th Avenue?
It's Avenue of the Americas.
Okay, you go up to York Avenue in the 70s. There's a school there. I forget which school it is. And when this school was built, they chiseled into the corner the
Sixth
address.
Avenue.
No, Avenue A. York Avenue used to be Avenue A. It stopped going north when the city, as Manhattan curved in towards the west, and then it started again when Manhattan curved back towards the east. Now it's a different name. So, you know, these they change, and it's hard, and I think Gabrielle's right. It's annoying when you look at a corner and can't figure out where.
Then add all of the parking signs that line the every way. We are...
But the signage that keep diplomats from corners, you'd never see that. When's the last time that was an issue? We did solve that problem.
We got to go, Mr. Mayor.
See you next week.
Have a good week. Absolutely.